104.6.
Radio Borders Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today's 25th of December. We will continue listen to Tenjin Tosin's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Devi. And please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. In the words of the Sri Lankan greeting, Terawan Saranai, may the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you, and I hope your week has been peaceful. We're going to start our conversation today with one of the most important topics that the Buddha taught, impermanence and death. We touched on it in our last program, and we'll go a bit further today, but before we do that, let's set our motivation for the program as we usually do. Remember that motivation is the most important aspect of any act. A deed that may appear quite positive on the outside may not be at all, because the intention behind it is harmful. And similarly, an act that may appear to be negative could be virtuous because of the wisdom and altruistic intention behind it. Do you know the famous story of the Buddha when he was a ship's captain in a life before he became enlightened? The captain was carrying a great number of traders with their wares on his ship to sell in far-off lands. One of the traders decided that he was going to kill the others so that he could take their products and make a fortune for himself. The ship's captain at the time was a bodhisattva, though not yet a Buddha, and with his powers he realized what the trader intended. He saw also that if the trader could carry out his plan, he would suffer immensely in the future for his evil deeds of killing and stealing. So the captain, with great compassion, not only for the other traders, but also for the one who would cause so much suffering for himself, decided that the only way to stop the massacre was to kill the murderously minded trader himself. And so he did. But it is said that he incurred no negativity because his intention was so pure. It's important to realize that the captain had as much compassion for the intended murderer as for his victims, and that is what made the action so special. A similar story about a nun also makes the rounds, though it's somewhat of a less happy ending. A great bandit was living not far from a nun in India. The bandit terrorized the region to such an extent that the nun decided the best thing to do was to kill him and so save all the people. But in amongst all the altruistic intentions in her mind, she let through the thought that the people of the region would think she was a great savior, having freed them from such a danger, and so she would gain a very good reputation. That thought completely poisoned the act, and the story leaves her in hell, where she was born because she accumulated the negative act of killing. Do you understand the difference between the captain's killing and the nun's? The captain had no thought for his own well-being. In fact, realizing that a murderer would land up in the hell realms, he thought to take on that suffering himself, rather than let the trader be tormented for ages for murdering so many other people. With his immense compassion for others and next to no concern for his own well-being, the captain did not create a negative karma, even though he became a murderer himself. The nun, on the other hand, allowed a self-centered thought to pervade her mind, and so she reaped the karma of killing. So, let us set as pure a motivation for this program today as possible, not letting any self-centered ambition spoil what could be very beneficial to us with the right intention. We're going through Shantideva's Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, a text on developing bodhicitta, the mind to attain enlightenment to help all other beings free themselves from suffering. And so let's make bodhicitta our motivation. It's the best motivation possible, because its focus is the benefit of all beings everywhere. So if we can set that motivation purely, we will create a vast positive potential that will definitely last until we become enlightened. Let's at least try to set such a motivation, even if we're doubtful of being able to fulfill it. Thank you. Now on to impermanence and death, for that is what Shantideva points to in the verses we've come to in his text. If you were with us last week, you will know that the chapter we are going through is mainly on facing up to our negative actions, confessing them, and making amends as far as we are able. Shantideva talks about the consequences of not dealing with the negative influences in our mind before death arrives, and invokes Buddha's teachings on impermanence. In fact, the Buddha said that the meditation on impermanence is one of the most important meditations, not only because it leads to the realization of the real nature of things, but because it brings us face to face with our inevitable death. Inexorably, we're moving towards death every instant, but we stubbornly refuse to acknowledge it and so fill our lives with meaningless and harmful activities. As Shantideva points out, if we do not contemplate impermanence and death, we may suddenly find ourselves dying without anything positive on our mind to help us cope. Having frittered away our life on nonsense and selfish activities, we will only have a clutter of negative influences in our mind, and that will not bode well for us. Opening out to what Pema Chodron calls our neuroses and facing them gives us the courage to work against them and bring more sanity into our dealings with life. Now, we spoke a little about the following verses in the last program, but if you don't remember or are new to the program, here they are again. But I may well perish before all my evils have been purified, so please protect me in such a way as will swiftly and surely free me from them. The untrustworthy Lord of Death waits not for things to be done or undone. Whether I am sick or healthy, this fleeting lifespan is unstable. Leaving all, I must depart alone. But through not having understood this, I committed various kinds of evil for the sake of my friends and foes. My foes will become nothing. My friends will become nothing. I too will become nothing. Likewise, all will become nothing. In his commentary on these verses, His Holiness the Dalai Lama points out that at death time we lose everything, our friends, possessions, and body. We even lose our name. But, His Holiness says, in the world we've left behind, an extra word will be added to our former name, the late Mr. or Mrs. such and such. And if our name bears an honorific, like Lord, Sir, or Lady, or even the high Tibetan title Rinpoche, we have committed many negativities for such a title, at death, all we will have is the result of the negativities. The title will then be completely useless to us. For instance, think of Sir Edmund Hillary. We might recall him with much respect and even reverence, but that and the Sir mean nothing to him now. Even climbing Mount Everest means little, although it made him famous throughout the world. All that remains as far as he is concerned are the habitual tendencies that he accustomed his mind to during his life. It seems fortunate that he was a humble man who didn't give much store to accolades and titles, although he was always gracious with his. Perhaps his best help in his current life was all the assistance that he gave to the people of Nepal, building schools, hospitals, and so on. Compared to the positive potential of that, his ascent of Everest is very secondary. But imagine if he'd been a mean man who paraded his honors like trophies and lorded it over everyone else. Just as in the real life case, the honors would now have no meaning for him, and he would have nothing but the meanness and arrogance that he nurtured in this life. You can imagine where that would have landed him after death. Sir Edmund Hillary is a very good example to us on how to conduct ourselves so that we can have peaceful deaths and positive coming lives. If we choose instead to give in to attachment for friends and aversion for enemies, His Holiness says the negative influences on our mind will surely ripen into painful experiences we will not like. And we spoke in the last program about the dangers of attachment to friends and aversion for enemies. So I'm not going to say much about that now. But if we don't develop a warm-hearted attitude to all beings, it is impossible to develop the wide-ranging and unconditional love and compassion so absolutely necessary to become an arhat, a bodhisattva, or a Buddha. In other words, if you want to become enlightened, you cannot have a mind that chooses between beings. There's no difference in the love and compassion that a highly realized being gives to a very close disciple and to a poisonous snake. Because he or she does not distinguish between friend, enemy, and stranger, the great being has developed a loving attitude to all beings. And that is something we must also do if we truly want to reach an enlightened state. We could say, as Shantideva implies, that by slotting people into friend, enemy, and stranger, and acting accordingly, we're only digging ourselves deeper and deeper into samsara. So that is why he says, once life is over, our friends and our enemies are meaningless to us. We leave them behind as so many leaves blowing in the wind. But the negative influences that attachment and aversion leave on our mind stream go with us and are just waiting to introduce us to torturers and demons, if only in our minds, in the future. That is why it's so important to think about death and impermanence now, while we are still healthy enough to expect some lifespan ahead. Even though that expectation may not be met, when we think about death, immediately we are impelled to do those things that will help us get through our darkest hour and to avoid actions that will just make death and our coming life terrible experiences. One Tibetan master said that if you didn't think about death in the morning, you will have wasted the whole morning. If you didn't think about death in the afternoon, you will have wasted the afternoon. And if you didn't think about death in the evening, you will have wasted the whole day. Which kind of says that most of us are on a very wasteful life cycle, don't you think? Those of you who follow the programs on the graduated path to enlightenment we did before this series on Shantideva may remember the 9-point death meditation that we did. That was some time ago now, so why don't we refresh our memories and give a chance for those who don't know it to hear it. The 9 points in this meditation are divided into groups of 3, each group leading to a conclusion. In the initial group of 3 points, we first consider how death is inevitable and that we can do nothing to stop or prevent it. Then we contemplate that death is coming ever closer, and again, we can't stop its march. Finally, we think how much time we've spent on preparing for death, usually finding that we spend most of our time trying to avoid even thinking about it, never mind preparing for it. This leads to the conclusion that I should do something to start preparing for it. For a Buddhist, that means practicing the Dharma. The tempo is picked up in the second group of points when we consider, first of all, that we have no idea when we will die. We might think we still have a long time to live, but if we look at the newspaper every day, we can see that people die at all stages of life, not only when they're old. Not so long ago, a 13-year-old boy playing in the Waikato River at Huntly jumped off a bridge into the water and disappeared. His body was found some days later. That is how close death is to us all, young and old. Then we contemplate how just about everything in our life can be an agent of death, and finally how weak this body is at withstanding anything with a potential to kill us. Those 3 points lead to the conclusion that we should no longer delay in preparing for death by practicing the Dharma. Then the last 3 points consider how helpful at death time are all those things that give us pleasure and reassurance during life, namely our body, our dear ones, and our possessions. Seeing that we have to leave them all behind and they will give us no protection or help at all leads us to the conclusion that we should not only practice the Dharma right now, but as purely and as powerfully as possible. So those are the 9 points and 3 conclusions. Now let's do a meditation on them. Please sit comfortably and bring yourself into your body, concentrating on the breath and letting everything else go. Just focus on the here and now. Now think about the inevitability of death. You're definitely going to die and there's nothing you can do about it. No medicine, doctor, or even Buddha can prevent your death, and you can go nowhere to escape it. Do you know of anywhere on earth, the deepest sea, the highest mountain, the most exotic land, you can go to where there's no death at all? Second, death is coming closer, and again you cannot stop it. Listen to your clock or imagine the ticks going by. How many ticks do you have left? Death is an unstoppable force heading towards you right now, and wherever you go it will follow, getting closer and closer until it catches you. Think of your usual day and see how much of it is spent on preparing for death. We get up in the morning, shower, eat breakfast and rush off to work. When we come home in the evening, we eat dinner, watch TV, study or socialize until bedtime. All these activities are concerned only with the happiness of this life. Have we really spent much time up to now thinking about death, never mind preparing for it? Shouldn't we start preparing practicing the Dharma to develop a positive mindset. Die. You might think that you still have a lot of time left, but rarely do you. Not only old people die, babies die, children die, teenagers die, adults from young to very old all die. We can't say when we will die. It may be tonight. We just don't know if we'll see the tomorrow's sunrise. Think about the things that can kill you. Your car, disease like cancer, a mugger high on pee, an earthquake. We face so many threats. Even the things that are supposed to keep us alive and safe can be agents for our death. Our food, our house in an earthquake, medicines, and so on. What about our body? How easily will it cope with an earthquake, cancer, or a car accident? If even an infected thorn prick can kill us, isn't this body weak against the threats of death? So, if we don't know when death will come, many things can kill us, and our body is so powerless, we should start practicing the Dharma right now, so that we have a positive mind to help us when death comes. Thank you. imagine lying on your deathbed surrounded by friends and possessions. Your friends all look somber and miserable, and you know that you're dying. Can your friends help you through this death process and into the next life? Your treasured possessions. Can they give you any comfort now? Imagine leaving them all behind. You're not able to take even the tiniest one with you. You go on completely naked and alone. About this body that you've looked after for so long and so well. You've fed it, washed it, clothed it, given in to all its innumerable demands for enjoyment. But now as you ask it to get up and go about its business, it will not move. When you need it most, it deserts you. What will help in the death process and beyond? Only the positive mental tendencies that we get through the Dharma teachings and mind training. Nothing else will help. So shouldn't we practice now and as purely and as powerfully as possible so that we have the strongest help when death does come? Please come out of meditation. If we regularly think about death in this way, we'll not be so happy to waste time on trivial and meaningless activities, but we'll find a strong impetus to practice the Dharma and free ourselves from suffering. That's all we have time for today. Thank you for joining me, and I hope you'll do so again next week. Please dedicate any positive energy from this program to attaining enlightenment to be of greatest benefit to all beings. Thank you. And goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering.